And we're live.
Already?
Actually, not live, but...
live. Rolling.
We're rolling.
Rolling.
Welcome, special guest number two in the MOD Master of Dart Hangout.
Thank you.
Sayo van Vliet.
Sayo van Vliet, yeah.
Sayo van Vliet. For those who don't know, Sayo is the multimedia manager of Master of Dart, but way more than that. So I want to touch base on a few topics. And as I forgot in the first episode, I'm Georgie, founder of Master of Dirt, and our great social media manager, Steven Spielberg, back here. Maybe you can cut yourself in. He got the idea for the Master of Dirt Hangouts, where we want to bring some attention back on the Master of Dirt YouTube channel, but also on the characters behind the scenes. And I think you shot inside the Master of Dirt, you shot in the desert, you shot in the snow, you shot on the Mass of Dirt battlefield. You're a very creative Dutch mind, and I'm a big fan of your work, so...
Thank you.
Let's get rolling.
Shot all the events since I joined in 2015, I think. Missed one.
What was the initial... How did we get to know each other?
I remember the first time I met you. I think it was the first time. It was at Lords of Dirt in France. In, what is it, the spot from La Machine?
Serignan.
Serignan. I was there with Desmond, and we were just doing one of our trips we always did. And then you were there as well, and Desmond had already written the show and introduced me to you. And then it was just classic Georgie partying together. I think we ended up, maybe not you, but like we, Desmond and me, ended up at the beach watching this really cool like thunderstorm after the party. But that was one of the first times I met you, I think. That was maybe in...
Yeah, it must have been 2011, maybe?
No, not that early. I think 2013.
Okay.
Or 14, something like that.
And maybe to go back a few steps, like what is your... You're from Amsterdam, right?
I'm not officially from Amsterdam. I grew up in the middle of the country, where it's like a nice nature, like a quiet town, nice to grow up but not so much to do, and we always ride bikes there.
So you're a rider? You ride?
Well, I'm a rider, but BMX.
What sports do you do?
Well, started with BMX, snowboarding, and then like when I moved to Innsbruck, started riding BMX a little bit less, and now I ride down on mountain bike and snowboarding and paragliding.
Why Innsbruck?
I wanted to live... main reason is I wanted to live together with my girlfriend. She didn't want to live in Amsterdam anymore. I didn't want to live in London, so we chose like a mutual ground. And first we thought we'd move to Salzburg because it's close to Vienna and still in the mountains, and we wanted to live in the mountains because my main... All my work is in action sports. And then one of our friends said, why don't you move into our apartment in Innsbruck? So we're like, yeah, why don't we try Innsbruck? And that worked out smoothly. It worked out as a really good idea, real good plan.
As an outsider, like, okay, Innsbruck is in the west of Austria?
It's in the west, yeah.
All the way west of Austria. I always have to do the nie ohne Seife waschen because I still don't get it after 34 years. Did I mention it's my birthday?
Oh yeah, happy birthday.
Applauso, maybe applauso. Here we can have a little applauso in the... Also fake applause would be nice here. Make me feel better when I listen to this. No, so Innsbruck is all the way in the west of Austria. Loads of mountains, really urban town, correct?
It's like... I think it's the biggest... down in the mountains in Europe. It's still small. It has between, I think, 160 and 250 people, depending on how many students are there at the time. And everyone is sort of outdoor-based or like outdoor-minded. So everyone wants to go outside rather than sit inside and just drink beer, which I really like. I like to drink beer as well, but I like to do that with an outdoor activity. Or like at least like have all the options to do outdoor stuff.
But no drink and drive, right? Or no. drink and
No.
Right.
No drink and ride.
Although you Dutchies, I mean, I've not seen anyone drink as much beer as you guys. I think two guys, crate of beer during a whole day without even being unstable, it's totally normal, right?
Yeah. That is certainly one of the things we do in the Netherlands, yeah. Although I did find that I have less of a resistance to it after moving away from Amsterdam.
We have been in the Netherlands at Zwarte Cross. Zwarte Cross, for those guys who don't know, it's like this insane festival in more or less the middle of nowhere, and they race lawnmowers, and they have this Ben Hur class where you have like trailers and it's like vehicles being towed, and it's pretty crazy. Maybe you can look up Zwarte Cross and just Google Zwarte Cross real quick and show us some images. It's pretty insane, and people are so drunk there. I've witnessed a lot in almost 20 years of Masters of Dirt, as you can imagine. But that is the next level. They're so drunk that in the puddle where everyone pisses, people are sleeping.
Or swimming. If it's raining, you know, that's a typical Dutch festival. Well, this is not a typical Dutch festival, but this is like the biggest Dutch festival actually, with 180 people in a weekend.
And maybe Google something like Zwarte Cross drunk or something like that. It's insane. Like, how many people did you say?
180 in the weekend, but like that's
180,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that is with people that they sell. It's not like the people don't buy a pass for a weekend. They can buy a day ticket as well, okay. And that's how they get the 180. And that's by far the biggest in the Netherlands.
Yeah, anyway,
I believe it's 180.
It's insane. We also have a Master of Dirt trailer. Maybe you can just show the trailer play the trailer when we talk about it.
I was there actually at the show, but then I didn't really. I knew Desmond, and I think he got me tickets.
But you were at the second show, right, or the first one? Because we did two. One was with the crossover jump, and one was the MOD only show. It's the MOD area. It's quite sick.
I think it was with a massive roll-in. But there was a crossover.
That was the second year then we did. Anyway, Zwarte Cross, crazy festival. I've not seen as much drunk people, but also like super creative things, like people with a double-decker coat, and then they were obviously hidden, and they had this little window, and they could poke out there.
Yeah.
Could poke out there, make them neck. The neck really long and bend over. It's just like you have to check it out or see the trailer or go there if you really want to have a dive into another culture.
Yeah.
Also a culture thing I'm really interested in. How is it with marijuana? Does everyone smoke weed in Holland?
No one smokes weed, basically.
Really?
Yeah, like a lot of people have smoked it once or twice. But for the rest, no one really. Like it's not that everyone smokes. Like skaters and stuff and like in the scene, but like most people don't really smoke.
Yeah, all skaters smoke weed.
Skaters smoke weed. But like in the scene, yeah, a lot of people smoke, but like on a normal average level, I think it's definitely under 20%, maybe even under 10%.
Crazy. Do you think it being legal makes it less interesting?
Yeah, for sure.
So do you experience more people smoking weed in Innsbruck than back home?
Yeah. For sure. Okay. And then but in Innsbruck, then it's really hard to get, you know, and blah, 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 blah. And it's way easier if it's regulated and you can just go to a store and then buy it. Same what you see in Portugal. They decriminalized everything. And it's not that everyone's instantly a heroin junkie, you know, but it's like a decrease of substance abuse.
And do you have like huge big Netherlands, you like big flower fields? Do you also have like wheat, huge wheat fields outdoor? Is it all indoor?
It's all illegal.
It's all illegal?
It's illegal. The system now is everything is illegal. Buying, selling, having, everything is illegal. Having, I'm not sure about. You can have up to 5 grams and you are sort of allowed, they allow you through the law to have 5 grams to buy from a coffee shop.
And the coffee shops grow, or is it like state institutions that grow? Who grows?
Yeah, that's unknown. So the coffee shops are not allowed to buy their product, but they're allowed to have half a kilo of it. at any given time. Not more than they get shut down. So they need to buy it from someone that grows it indoors somewhere illegally. And then they're hunting down those weed growing areas. That's whilst having it open at the same time, like how it is in the United States, is a way more healthy approach to that. And the Netherlands is currently a bit stuck, I feel, in that way.
That's crazy. Like, and how is it? Because mushrooms, you can also buy mushrooms in the coffee shops, or not anymore?
There was two types of mushrooms. We call them podos. Those are illegal now, and truffles are still legal. They sort of do the same, I believe. And one you can still buy, the other ones you can't.
And like Joe Rogan actually talked in a podcast about people that had edibles like marijuana cookies or whatever.
All illegal.
And had too much. And ever since, they've never been normal. Also with mushrooms, I think it's a fine line if you're not completely nice. Like, I'm too scared to do it because I'm a more panicky guy. But how is it in Amsterdam? Do you read stories in the newspapers, or do you see people tweaking and flying around like tourists?
Not at all.
Like falling in the water or whatever?
In coffee shops, you will see some tourists buying a brownie, which is edible, that is allowed, and a pure joint. And then they will get told, don't eat half the brownie, see how you feel. After an hour or two, if you feel fine, you have to rest. And then they sit down, have the brownie, smoke the joint, and throw up. Yeah, always.
Okay.
And then it's like, if you don't feel well now, go to your hotel as soon as you can, as fast as you can, and see if you get in bed, because you will come have a bad time. But like, normal people don't really do that. And the horror stories I heard are basically from friends abroad that did trips to Amsterdam and just went there to get fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. And then really fucked up.
And then really fucked up,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And how is it, the techno scene? I remember me and Andy Bravey, when we started, we were listening to like Roughneck Record tracks and stuff. Maybe we can also show it. If you just search for Roughneck Records on YouTube, then you can see Sayo will start moving in his natural habitat. But you guys, like, there's day festivals.
Well,
like not Madness.
Thunderdome is an indoor festival, and Dominator is an outdoor festival.
Go there with a bus for 12 hours, and then like everyone's
the festival scene is massive in the Netherlands as well. And like they took techno from music and techno from the late 80s into the 90s, and went harder and harder and harder. And then they started Thunderdome back in, I don't know, 92, IDNT started that, and then they started to go harder and harder and harder, and that evolved into hardcore, and that became a massive subculture, big group. And then we would go there, it's 12 hours, 55,000 people, end with a laser show, and then go home again. And it's insane, it's super cool to see how much of a big difference of people there is, a big variety of people that is just there and loves the same stuff. You don't go there for your fairy tale festival experience. You go there to listen to hardcore on a really big sound system and get your skinny jeans whipped off your shins, you know, off the bass. And then for 12 hours, and everyone that's there, super mixed, you know, massive bodybuilders with these plastic girlfriends and like nerds and like whatever. And everyone's just there, cool. You like the same garbage music.
No fights.
No fights. Nothing.
Nothing. That's cool. Let's. That's the old school stuff I listen to.
That's old school, yeah.
Wait till the bass kicks in. Should come soon, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's very old school.
Feels very old school.
With the happy.
Yeah, this is happy.
Wait, it's gonna come bomb, bomb, bomb. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's anywhere up from 160 BPM, I think, to...
BPM stands for beats per minute, for those who don't know.
Yeah, to 250.
Keep it going, wait.
It's So, it's good, eh?
Thanks, Mr. Spielberg. Yeah, it's good. It gives you a lot of drive. Yeah, cool. I mean, I've always, like, you know, there's always been this myth around the Netherlands and the weed and the hardcore parties years ago. Like I said, this Merze, my friend, Dieter Beton, they drove from Vienna to the techno or hardcore festival.
Yeah, to Thunderdome, maybe. Yeah. That was legendary. They had like a massive, it was right before my time, it was in 1969, 96, crazy. Like a massive merry-go-round inside the hall where you could listen to hardcore.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. So, yeah, look up Zwarte Cross. We're going to talk about Zwarte Cross. And for sure, look up some Thunderdome and Dominator. And you can just put the stuff without sound in the background. So people can actually imagine how much of a movement that is there.
And you can put it in the show notes underneath the podcast.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That as well. But then you can also lay it over if you fancy a bit of extra work, Mr. Spielberg. But it's, a crazy culture. Back to business. How did you get into photography?
I got into photography when I graduated. I got a camera from my dad, which I really wanted. I always saw him shooting. And then I just started shooting my mates, riding. And then that evolved into shooting them more and more and more. And then I didn't really know what I was going to do for school. Then I did civil engineering for very little bit. It's where you do all the structures outside. So you would calculate if a building can get built somewhere, what they need to do for that, and do all the calculations for a foundation and stuff. And I thought it was more like a architectural thing. So I could design buildings that you could then sneak in a couple of design features so you could ride them. That was my initial idea. Turns out it's a lot of math and a lot of calculations, and that wasn't for me, so I quit that. Then I started sort of traveling, well, not really traveling, just go to ride a lot of BMX contests with my friends, like anywhere where I could go, really, and then shoot there as well, you know, go on a trip here to shoot, go on a trip there to shoot, go on a trip there to ride, and just take any opportunity there was. Then I enrolled in the Photo Academy in Amsterdam. Did that for 2 years. It's actually 2.5 years. And then I couldn't get into the exam year because they said, I wasn't ready, I didn't have the few. So it was like, cool. I think that I don't have, like, a photo from a photographer is always a reflection of how interesting someone is. And I don't think I'm interesting. I didn't live through anything. I didn't experience cool stuff. So why?
Well, you surely did by now.
Yeah, by now. So I was like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to experience stuff. And then in the end, I'll see if my photos follow. So then I went traveling even more. And then at one point I was doing like 32 trips a year or something.
That's a lot.
The maximum amount of days I was in Amsterdam was like maybe a week, 10 days, and all like short trips, long trips, and then at one point like trips with MOD, and then worked at SoulCycle BMX store in Amsterdam, which was maybe 7 minutes from my house.
Is that still around?
That is still around. I just saw they had they redid the whole shop. Shout out to SoulCycle BMX.
Yeah, just wanted Amsterdam. To say if you're from... Yeah. Netherlands or Holland, like we say. Do you say Holland in English?
No, Holland is actually the two provinces where all the cities are. Okay, well, the Netherlands,
if you're in the Netherlands, go check out SoulCycle BMX in Amsterdam.
Yeah,
I was there.
They're
too.
Really cool. And they were always super flexible with, because I just had my days there, but if I would have a shoot, I could easily get it off and switch it around to do my shoot or go on a trip. And then shoot like that. And then I just started shooting more and more and more. And then I think I did Lords of Dirt. And then got into snowboard photography. And did a couple of shoots there. Went on the snowboarder magazine board guide things. And then got into snowboarding more. And then I think I met you and started... And then you asked me to do the Master of the Earth team week in at Royal Hills.
Yeah.
And then to your house, because I had a drone and I could shoot photos. And then we made a deal that I would give you a great prize and I would come in all the tour stops and held your word ever since.
Awesome. And awesome. I got you into Audi9s.
And you got me into Audi9s. Jeez, yeah, that was also cool.
How is it with Audi9s? Because it must feel like you won an award the year we were there. We made more noise for you than for all the riders at the award night, I remember. Yeah. And then but how is it there? So there's more photographers and then you compete, but you all see what each other are doing. How does that work?
The year that I was there, the first year that when they did still the photo contest, it was... they had two event photographers on site that would just cover the event, and then they'd hire three photographers for a photo contest that then get complete creative roam. They can do whatever they want. So you can meet with a rider and make a special project here or do a little bit of there. And then at the end, you needed to create a slideshow and then give the best... I think they had three categories where you had to give hand in the photo and a slideshow. That was a really nice work environment to work in, to just have creative freedom and just to do whatever you feel like, and then not that someone says, okay, you... do you have this angle or this branding in, you know? Sometimes really nice to work like that, but this was very refreshing to work, to just create whatever you want. And then some people, some photographers showed their work, some didn't. I liked to show my work with the riders anyway, or share my work with the riders. So then I always do the, I work pretty fast in Lightroom and get all my stuff out quick, name everything, and then put it on my phone, and then I can just on events I can airdrop to the rider stuff that they can use for their own social media and stuff. And the riders are always very happy then when I show up with an airdrop with a little package of photos of the session that happened an hour or two before.
Sick. You can even go from your big SLR camera onto the phone.
I can do that, but I don't really do that. Okay. I just shoot the whole thing, focus on the shooting. Go straight back down, plug my thing in, download them, pull them through everything, edit them, export, name, and then export, and then...
So the year you won the award, didn't you snuck in at night into the spot with Sam in that space suit, and it was like an original space suit?
I didn't win in the end, but it was free e-bikes for free photographers, so we divided them normally, but I was definitely crowd favorite. If I can say myself. there was a lot of rooting and tooting. But we snuck in at night, Sam and me, to shoot. We had him in... I wanted to shoot a photo at night in the satellite dish wearing the spacesuit, which was a very fragile, hard to maneuver in thing. And we didn't have a lot of light and we couldn't put up a lot of light because there was... We needed to have everything dark for the photo and the long exposure and stuff. So I had him riding in a couple of times, and then the last photo that we actually used, he rode in, he had to pedal in and then jump onto the satellite dish, do an air on the satellite dish, and then ride out again, jump out of the satellite dish and land into the bank again. And as he jumped into the thing in pitch black, the visor of the satellite man shot and he couldn't see anything, so he had to do everything blind and then ride out again. And that turned out to be the shot that I used. And then it's with the Milky Way behind it.
So how do you do it that you can see the Milky Way? Is that
this actually was a composition?
Long exposure.
This actually was a composition of two shots. So you just leave it on a tripod, make one shot. With the flashes and the lighting, and then I did another long exposure for that because we had to have a little bit of riding light for him, and that would have, with a long exposure, that would have blown out the photo.
Interesting stuff, man. Interesting stuff. So if I was listening to this, or if I was Mr. Spielberg without the connection of his cousin, the legend Clemens Cardella, and I want to get into Mass of Dirt, or I want to start photos or filming, let's stick with photos. How do you start? How much do I need to invest? And what's the minimum thing? And do I get Canon? Do I get, I don't know, Minolta or Sony, or I don't know what's
Minolta,
out there.
Minolta, that's very old school.
Or Leica, I don't know.
What for me really, the camera brands are all the same. If you spend €1,000, you get €1,000 worth of camera. If you spend €2,000, you get €2,000 worth of camera. You know, they're all the same. And the more money you put in, the more camera you can get out. That's sort of how it works. But you don't need the best camera. You can pick up a secondhand camera. What for me really worked is coming from a rider background. But that is not necessary. And what really worked is to have a friend that's pro. Desmond, at the time, I could always just go whatever I thought of. Yo, you want to hit up this? Let's take a photo there. Or let's make this project. Let's make this happen. And that's a really nice way to learn and to work, you know. And that's... Or someone that's a good rider, because you can always just link up together, form a team, and then he can have creative input, you can have creative input, and then you'd learn together in a way. But otherwise, if you just, you need to find a rider or think of things. But I think it's really good if you have a strong connection with a rider that you can then do a lot of things together with.
But do I need, these days, iPhone versus big camera, high format versus landscape, you know, stories, what would you recommend, or is there just no secret and you just...
It's for video, for sure, iPhone can work. For photo, I don't really know. Yeah, you can probably do it, but it's not my preferred thing. I like a digital DSLR. Just with a mirror still, but I would like the mirrorless cameras are also very nice.
And now, what lens?
Depends on what photo you want, what kind of thing you want. Like a fisheye always works for extreme sports, almost always. And then you just get a fisheye.
Excuse me.
So you get a fisheye and 24-70 and a 70-200. Then you have the standard range. But how I started was with a crop camera with just a 35mm prime. And that works pretty good, because if you get a prime, you need to learn how to make your composition rather than just zoom in because you want to get it closer. You need to actually come closer to get your thing right. So that would maybe be a good thing. Just get a basic camera with one prime lens or two prime lenses. And then go from there.
So yeah, kids, write that down. If you want to be stepping in Sayo's footsteps, as I said, very proud, always very, very blown away by your photos.
Thank you.
You shot the GTR recently. Maybe we can also show those shots. I mean, that literally was not even half an hour.
No, and without a plan.
Yeah. And without a plan, we even washed the car just before you shot it, and it all worked out, and then it started raining. It's crazy to see how different your approach is. I find that really cool. I wonder how much data do you own, and how do you keep track of not losing control or the archive, the stuff?
Yeah, so I've got decades. A big NAS at home, 12 terabytes, which is starting to get pretty full. But that's also with video projects. Video projects are organized very meticulously. I have them all named. One of my friends, Jits Vlaar, taught me how to edit, and he would whip me down if it wasn't perfectly organized. So that's all perfectly organized in raw projects, and then everything is fully organized. The photos I organize... a bit different. I just give them the name of the project. And then the finder organized them into like the dates. And everything is currently in my Lightroom, like the current project. And then so when I meet the shot of Sam Reynolds or Clemens Cardella, I just type in the name, have them all. But like, for example, I did Prime Park Sessions, which is a training camp, media camp on the Stubaier Glacier in Tirol. And that was about 6 weeks. I think I did 12 shooting days.
Damn.
Or 14. And it was 13,000 photos.
But like me, I even hate being on a chairlift going up and go down four times. I mean, I don't hate it. I like it when it's sunny, but as soon as there's a little snowstorm or, you know, when you have to a little connection where you have to like push up with your skis, I'm like, oh, that's annoying. How is it when you shoot 13 days sometimes in the powder with the heavy camera gear?
That was all... That was actually a completely private resort because it was Corona and we got shuttled up in the morning with a T-bar or a snowcat, and then we were there completely private. But I did another shoot in the backcountry, and then I got there and then we're like, yeah, the resort is closed. So I was like, cool, what are we going to do? They were like, we're going to tour up. And it was skiers, which are way faster. And I was on a splitboard, not very experienced, but splitboarding by then. And then you have like, I don't know, like 15, 20 kilos of thing on your gear. And you, when you get out the door, it's cold. And as soon as you start, you're super hot, sweating, take everything off. And then like when it's super deep, it's just like really draining if you want to move, because especially when it's snow, with dirt, you can walk somewhere and walk back and there's no track of that. With snow, you need to pay attention to every step you make, because you might want to shoot that angle later and then you don't want to have it tracked. So you need to go around a lot to go to another location and see if it works, and then go around completely back if it doesn't work, not to ruin your other shots that you might gonna do.
Sounds horrible.
And then you just like dive into the snow, you like sink into the snow until your nipples with 20 kilos on your back. You have snowshoes, but they don't do much at some point.
Do you panic sometimes?
No, not just panic. The best is just like to just sit, give up for like the half a minute, and then like, okay, cool, then we go further. Not panic, don't panic a lot.
Man, that sounds crazy. Also, we shot in the desert. We're going to show some shots from the best of IMOD. That was crazy. Remember, like we were there with motorcycles, was with Kai and Alistair. And we saw them up there. Oh, we're going to walk up there. And then you walk up the dune and it looks like, okay, I'm up there in 2 minutes. And it's never ending, never ending. There is sand everywhere. There's like sand stormy thing. It's really gnarly. And then you're up the dune and then there is just, I'm sure we can see in some photos, endless dune after dune after dune after dune. And you're like, how on earth did the Bedouins do it back in the day? Where did they find water? How did they know where to go? I guess they orientated with the sun.
Yeah.
But that
was crazy. That's the same as walking in snow, you know? Every step you do is just heavy. And then you want to set up your flashes 50 meters away. You need to run there, set up your flash, run back, see if the shot works, run back, adjust the flash, run back again. And then have the rider, try to communicate with the rider that's like loving life and riding dunes 100 meters away from you, and then organize it, then shoot it, and then you go to the next thing and try not to get hit by the other riders. That's the same at the Masters of Dirt show. When you step into the arena with your cameras around you and like the light go down, like goosebumps everywhere, and then as soon as the show starts, it's everything tries to kill you. There's like bikes this direction, that direction, flamethrowers everywhere, explosives, things are falling out of the air, snowmobiles landing. And it's like, there's one time where I walked behind a ramp and then Bernie, our legendary production manager, grabbed me, pulled me back, and then in front of my nose was just one of those flame waves. I was like, oh, okay, I need to pay better attention. It was in the beginning, but it's always, it's like a stressful environment to be in.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, yeah, it's like a battlefield. We actually have to, all the media crew needs to sign off basically their life and make sure they're insured very well at Masters of Dirt, because it's so hectic. Stuff is flying everywhere. And one thing I wanted to, two more things about the dunes. Like, so I was, first I was walking, and then when the motorcycle was, were landing on the dune next to us after like a 60 meter jump, the whole dune was vibrating. Like it's probably an earthquake. Luckily I haven't really felt one yet, but that felt like an earthquake of a only 100 kilo motorcycle plus rider landing. It was, was insane. And then I was on a motorcycle myself, and then you pass two dunes. It's easier than, it's not as, like, it's not easy peasy, but it's easier than walking. But I got lost instantly, and then the bike wouldn't start anymore.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And then I would push up, and I would be like, okay, behind this dune, there's our base camp for sure. And behind this dune, there was nothing. There was a camel farm with a farmer, like, taking care of his camels, but he spoke obviously no English, nothing. So we just waited there. One guy found me, and then tried to find a base camp, and then they got me and got the motorcycle. But that is like, you have to be really, really careful out there.
Yeah.
In the dunes, in the snow, and in on the Mass of Dirt show field. And I don't even want to imagine how it is to shoot surfers. Like, imagine big wave shooting on the jet skis or something.
Yeah, no. if water gets liquid, it's a no-go for me. It doesn't... but like, that must be insane, you know, where you're either in the water, and the whole thing with surfing is like, it can be a 1 meter wave, but the wave starts at your shoulders. So it's not like a 1 meter ramp you're going to ride through, which starts at your feet, it starts at your neck. So you need to sort of stay in there if you want to shoot small barrels, and the big ones on the jet skis and stuff. It's just like, it's very, very intense, I think.
Yeah, shout out to all the big wave surfers. It was a pleasure to talk to you. I think we gotta wrap it up, because the birthday party is starting. I can hear the first guests. We can actually maybe have a sneak peek on what has been going on in the Sam Reynolds vlog that should be releasing soon, because I know the guys are gonna shoot in the skate park.
Oh, sick.
Anything any last words?
No, I hope we get to do shows very soon again.
Yeah, I hope so too. Actually, the Elements tour was supposed to be the tour this year.
Do you
so
know who came up with that name?
You?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Good. We'll still take we'll still take a while until we actually can do the Elements tour, because the total freeze... No. Wait. Freestyle Evolution was supposed to be in 20. That's going to happen now, 2022. Elements only going to happen 2023. Ooh. But we got loads of stuff up our sleeve, and
must be.
We're very excited, and can't wait to see you escaping flamethrowers and flying motorcycles and snowmobiles.
And that will take a training session to get back used to it.
Last but not least, I mean, we're going to have some of your work obviously in the description and as a slideshow whilst we're talking. But where can we find you online? Where can we book you? Are you even available, or are you completely booked?
Upcoming period's pretty completely booked. But I'm always available. You can either find me on hologrammedia.com or on my Instagram at Sayo van Vliet.
Nice. Cool. We put it in the description. Thank you so much, Sayo. It was a pleasure having you as a second guest.
For sure. My pleasure. My honor.
And speak to you soon.
Yeah. Let's celebrate your birthday then.
We will. For sure.
Cool.
Yeah.